Hello and welcome to today's podcast. This is Youth Football Development with Coach Luke. Today, we are going to be talking about the topic of the importance and benefits of sport for young people. So, a really great topic. I mean, I've been working in youth sports for many years now, whether that's with Stoneham, Southampton School Boys, in the community, in different schools, etc. So I think, you know, I've seen firsthand the benefits that sport has on young people, and in lots of ways, you know, the social benefits, the health benefits, and we're going to cover all that today. But the brilliant thing is, it's not going to be just me. I've got my mate Glenn Neckles coming in, and he's going to be also discussing this with me. So that's going to be really good. Okay, sorry, I'm having some problems with my audio here, but it should be fine. Fingers crossed this lead's not going to play up. Okay, so with no further ado, guys, if you're watching this now on the live Facebook feed, please just press share, press like, check it out. If you haven't already, go over to my page, Youth Football Development with Coach Luke, and you can like and follow that for weekly updates on what I'm doing, whether I'm doing a live football session in the morning or anything. You can see it all on there and all the previous podcasts as well. There's some really cool material. I'm also sharing this out on the Southampton School Boys page. So please, if you haven't checked that out yet, go over and like that page. It's a new page I've created for the upcoming Southampton School Boys season, which I'll be taking the under-13s for. But as I say, guys, with no further ado, I'm going to give Glenn a call and we're going to get going with this discussion. Okay, so bear me 1 second. I'm just going to give Glenn a buzz. There we go. We can hear it. I'll just turn it up a little bit.
Hello.
And here he is, the man himself.
Hey Luke, how you doing?
Hey buddy, you alright?
Yeah, very good, very good.
Good stuff. Okay, so I'm just gonna turn the volume down on the laptop, so that's gonna interfere otherwise. Can you hear me? Yeah, cool. Okay, cool. Hopefully the audio is all right coming through here. So as I said, Glenn, today we're gonna be talking about the importance and the benefits of sport for young people. Lots of stuff with that. I've already said how I've been working in sports for many years. I know you've worked in the youth sector for many years as well, and probably seen firsthand the importance that this has on young people's lives. So before we get into it, can you just let me know, just introduce yourself and tell us what you do within the youth sector?
Yeah, sure. Is this just an audio link? Can you see me, or is it just audio?
This is just audio for the people watching on Facebook Live. I can see you, but they can't. They can just hear you. You know what, I'm always worried about that. I've been worried about that for many years. So yeah, it's
this is a subject dear to my heart. For you guys that don't know me, I've been working in the private sector, public sector, working with young people for well over 30 years, and I've worked in youth clubs, secure units, children in care. I've coached various sports, tennis, etc., etc. So, sport and young people is something very dear to my heart, and I've been a massive advocate of the importance of sport, not just for young people. Obviously, I think that applies across the board, but for young people in particular, that's the topic under discussion today. So, for young people in particular, it is, I'd say, it's vital. And the benefits of it are huge. Now, just to give you an example, as I say, I've worked with young people in secure units, young people that have committed, you know, some pretty awful offences and have found themselves locked up. And one of the key denominators that I found with pretty much all of them is that they had no interests, no other interests. They never had any hobbies. They weren't affiliated to any youth or sports clubs. And I found it really strange. You know, I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of young men and women, and I still do. And that is still true. The vast majority of the young people that I'm working with currently and over the years have, it's a bit of a generalization, but have very little interest in sports or affiliation to sports or, you know, any other sort of social type clubs. So that, it's always got me thinking, in the absence of something like sport, it doesn't have to be sport, but in the absence of something like sport, too often I've found that young people can quite easily go off the rails. Now, clearly that's not meant to categorise every young person. I'm speaking from my experience in the fields that I've worked in. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Luke.
No, I agree. So, you know, a lot of these, I found that when I talk to the kids, when I've worked in the schools, etc., whether that's primary school, secondary school, even the colleges that I've been in previously, the ones that have problems sometimes, and whether it's behavioural or something like that, I don't think they feel a sense of inclusion in sport and with other people. They feel quite isolated a lot of the time. I don't know if you agree with that. They feel like they're not necessarily part of something, so they can't just do their own thing. And sometimes go off the rails, like you say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've had this discussion before, but I truly believe that sport in many ways mirrors society or some of the skills, the social skills that you will need in society. And sport, I mean, when I say sport, I mean sport that's taught correctly, because I believe that there are some pretty poor coaches out there that perhaps don't get the vital message across. But sport that's taught properly, I think, has massive, massive benefits. I mean, just for one, just if we just look at the health implications, you know, our country, along with a lot of Western countries, America probably in particular, are experiencing a massive obesity problem. Mm-hmm. And that can start very, very young. So just the health benefit of doing some sort of physical exercise, having fun, enjoying yourself. I don't really care what standard you reach, but just participating in some kind of physical exercise has massive benefits, long-term benefits, into, you know, adulthood and beyond. So that's just one, but there are so many that often get overlooked. For example, every sport that you have, every competitive sport that you have, will have rules. That's a given. There will be rules.
Indeed. Before we get into the rules, Glenn, I'm just going to stop you there, because there's one question I want to ask you, and the next one is about the rules. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So before we get into it, of course, at the moment we're in quarantine with the lockdown, coronavirus, etc. I've got a question here. What do you think parents can do to encourage their children during this lockdown period to stay active? You know, especially during a time at the moment where there's so much social media, they can just sit there on their phones and go on the computer. You know, what can parents do to encourage them?
That's a good question. I think any responsible parent would want their child to be healthy, and exercise is part of that. Obviously, there's eating, sufficient sleep, etc., that goes alongside it, but you want your child to be healthy, and I think it's a no-brainer. If they're keeping active, they're going to be healthier. There's no question to that, and happier. So if you can be imaginative and create a home gym, or if you're lucky enough to have a garden, you know, a little obstacle course in the garden,
yeah,
or failing that, something like skipping, anything at all that gets them moving and having fun. And fun is the, you know, particularly at a very young age, fun is the key. You want people to realise that they are keeping healthy without thinking about that. No, I don't think any young child goes out and plays football or anything strictly to be healthy. They go there to have fun.
Absolutely.
Fun is the optimal word, you know. They don't go and say, I'm going down to the local park to get some physical exercise and aerobic and cardiovascular movement. No, they don't. I'm going down to run around with Dave, Johnny, Sally, whoever it might be. So it's fun is the key.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, so just be imaginative.
Yeah, because I found during this period I've been trying to do my morning live videos in the garden, doing the Facebook football stuff. And this week, earlier on this week, I've done some multi-skills activities. And I found that the numbers have been all right, but they've been quite low. Like, the first week, more people did it, but then it was like parents messaging me saying, oh, I'm trying to get him off the computer. And I think that's always a barrier, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's so easy to sit there and play FIFA. And like you say, fun's the main thing, but I think once you get them out there doing it, then they're just, you know, that's when they can carry on and enjoy it.
Yeah, sure. But you have to, you know, lead by example. You know, roll your sleeves up and get involved, I think. Definitely.
So, brilliant. Perfect. Okay, so yeah, moving on to the benefits. You spoke about the rules, which I think is a brilliant one. So if you just tell us what you think about how the rules in sport can relate to life and the other stuff in that. I mean, I've got a few bits down here, like being competitive within that and, you know, winning and losing. The rules that you use in sport and how young people can then relate that to their day-to-day lives. That'd be great.
Yeah, sure. Like I say, I think if you think of sport mirroring society, society has rules. You know, I'd love to drive at 100 miles an hour to get home late at night, but the rules state that I can't go over a certain speed limit, and I stick to those rules. You know, we all pay taxes. There's a rule. You know, we all we can't go around punching each other in the head. There are rules that prohibit that. So there are rules all the way through its society. And I have noticed, particularly my time in the secure union, where there were literally no young people participating in any sport prior to them, you know, ending up getting locked up. They were rule breakers.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, they're locked up in a secure unit because they are rule breakers. And I would suggest that perhaps they never had the opportunity to have sport and learn the importance of rules and you know, learning that discipline to think, okay, these are rules. This is how I need to conduct myself. This is what I need to do to not fit in. I'm not suggesting people need to fit in,
no.
But to be part of society.
Yeah.
You know, so I found that a lot of young people, particularly in the secure unit, but even now I'm working in care homes, these young people are rule breakers, and none of them have had any real exposure to organised sport and organised coaching. And I think it's a shame, and I think it's a real shame.
I've come across this this one of my favourite quotes of all time is a quote that says, within sport it's about teaching the game whilst coaching more than the game, and I really believe that within my coaching, something I try and do. For instance, I've had my team, they're now under 16 since they were under 10s, and we've always kind of tried to instill the rules of the sport, but also how it can relate to their life and you know, principles and, you know, behaviour and, you know, hard work, togetherness, teamwork, respect, all those things there. So I think that's something that is so important to me personally as a coach. And if I couldn't install that within my coaching, I wouldn't coach. I certainly don't do it just for the fact of getting up there and teaching somebody to kick a ball. If that's, of course, part of it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're a good coach, your coaching skills should go beyond the particular sport that you're teaching. I'll give you a very quick example of where I've applied that. And I worked in a youth club many, many years ago. We got a little team together, took part in a five-a-side competition. Now, I have to say that my youth club was a particularly, many would describe as a particularly rough youth club. The young people that came there would probably be described as very rough street kids, for want of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And I coached them in this tournament. And in one of the earlier rounds, the players got into a bit of an altercation. We got through it. Then we got to the finals. We were going to play that same team that we played in the earlier round. And I could hear my players and that they're going to get revenge on this particular player, i.e. they were going to go out there and deliberately hurt him.
Yep.
And I said to them, if I see single foul, a deliberate foul on that player, I'm calling you all off. I don't think they believed me. The whistle had barely blown
one of the players went in and tackled this particular opposition lad and just sidelined him, just knocked him into the barriers, and he was out of the game. And I spoke to the referee and I took team off. Well, you can imagine the reaction I got from these kids. Oh, we're in the final. You can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of that. And you know, and I believe that they were learning a greater lesson than winning a side competition. You know, and going back to rules again. And I know, and obviously I stood my ground, and that was the end of it. That the other team won by default.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the greater message far outweighs any little trophy they may have won or any sort of short-term adulation they would have got for winning this tournament.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I once heard of an academy doing the same sort of thing, a foreign academy, and taking players off in big games because of their attitude. And they went on to lose the game as well, but it's about teaching them the right way. And I think, I can't remember what the saying was, it's about coach the person, not the player. They were talking about that. And you want to try and coach the person to be, as you know, the person who can go on and do more in life than just football. You know what I mean? So yeah, attitude's so important. So I've got here any other things you think that are important within the sport.
So many. We talked about rules. I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
But also, just patience. No one in sport has achieved anything without application. You know, Michael Jordan did not wake up being able to dunk a basketball. And I would suggest that the players that are the top have applied themselves more than others. There are naturally gifted players out there. For, you know, if you looked at Ronnie O'Sullivan, I think he practiced anywhere near as much as someone maybe like Steve Davis.
Yeah.
But they both reached the top of their profession. And even Ronnie would have had to put in, you know, the hours of practice. I think a natural ability can take you so far. But just being able to apply yourself to something. Transferable skill for that is, you know, when they leave school, they're going to have to go to work. They're going to have to apply themselves to that job. They're going to have to get up every day and go and do the work and try and make an impression and try and do it to the best of their ability. They're going to have to apply themselves. If they decide to go on to further studies, they have to apply themselves to a rigorous sort of program of study. So sport can teach you the power and the importance of application. And that application, you get instant feedback. Or well, not necessarily instant, but you get feedback. If you apply yourself over a course of time, you will see improvement.
Yep.
And if there is improvement, then I'll put it down to the coach. if you apply yourself over a period of time, get that feedback. Yep. I'm getting better. I'm actually good at this. Wow, I never thought I would reach these heights, whatever it might be. Sport teaches you that you know, gives people that ability to apply themselves.
Yeah, perfect. I think this is absolutely brilliant. I mean, next thing I'd say from that moves on nicely is ownership. How do you think that the kids can take ownership of this? Because, of course, applying yourself is one thing in terms of going to a coaching session or going to a lesson at school or college and a teacher talking to you saying, we're doing this, you've got to do that. But outside of that, you've got to, like you say, apply yourself and take ownership to think, right, I'm going to practice this today. I'm going to practice that today, you know.
And I think ownership is it goes further than that, Luke. I think ownership is, if I'm not achieving, I need to take ownership. Is it my fault? Am I applying myself correctly or as often as I need to?
Mm-hmm.
And look at external reasons. Oh, I'm no good because, you know, the coach is rubbish. That could be the case in some cases,
yeah.
To a degree. I'm no good because I haven't got the proper equipment, or I'm no good because whatever. Really take ownership for what I do. What can I do to keep applying myself, keep getting better? So ownership is owning what you do and owning got shortcomings as well, owning your failures as well, and recognizing them as failures. And there is nothing wrong with failures. We can get onto that later.
Yeah, sure.
There's actually nothing wrong with failure. Failure is an important ingredient in success. So the ownership is, it's down to me. What I put in is what I will get out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
perfect. And I think along with ownership, perseverance as well. I mean, one of my idols who I read his books and watch lots of stuff on him, Kobe Bryant. And I remember one time he said about how he was playing in a game, can't remember what game it was, and he hit like 5 or 6 air balls. So they were in the right direction, but they were just like falling short every time. And Shaq come over to him and put his arm around his shoulder and said, you know, it's all right, it's all right. And Kobe was like, I'm fine, you know, because he knew what he had to do to get better. So he wasn't taking the negatives. I think a lot of kids, they lose a game, they get their head down, that's it, the end of the world. But if you can try and turn that around, take the positives and think, I've got to go back and work on this, like Kobe did. He got back home after that match and went in the gym for like 12 hours, just practicing his free throws. And he knew that he had to get his legs and his arms stronger. So I think it's about taking the failures and turning them into what can lead to future success.
Definitely. And, you know, could play basketball for 1,000,000 years probably and never be as good as Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. That's a given. However, I can reach a certain standard if I keep going and keep accepting, okay, I wasn't very good today, tomorrow's another day. I'll apply myself and tomorrow's another day. And so I think there is a huge... I've experienced a huge fear of failure in young people, to the point, and I need to just sort of stop and take stock for a second. A lot of my thoughts are based on working with young people in care, working with young people in the criminal justice system, working with young people in a youth environment, but generally in quite a run-down underprivileged area. So that's shaped my views. I think that a huge fear of failure, to the point that people would rather not try something
For sure,
than try and possibly fail. And I've seen so many young people say, yeah, I'm brilliant at this, I'm brilliant at that, and you say, well, I'm just going to do it then, and say, no, I'd rather not.
Absolutely. I've been in football games. I've been in football matches before where I've told a player to take a free kick because I felt like it's in the perfect spot for them. And I know as a coach, as their coach and manager, their ability and that they can do that. But and then I asked them to take the free kick, and in that moment he said no. You know, I've had the same thing with penalties because they're afraid they're going to fail. You know, so that's a massive thing. Yeah.
And there's never been anyone who's amounted to anything or succeeded in anything who hasn't failed, ever.
Yep.
You can't show me a successful businessman, you can't show me a successful athlete, writer, actor. It doesn't matter what, all of them would have experienced some failures. And when I'm coaching, I don't coach to win. I think that's easy.
Absolutely.
It's easy to deal with winning. You don't have to coach that. It's just great. Everything's wonderful. Do coach young people how to it's not how to lose, but how to manage it, rather.
Yeah.
That's far, far, far more important.
Yeah. And it's not easy. It's not easy. Learning to lose before you can win is not easy. I remember when I used to play pool when I was younger, and I played against my friend Simon Ayres, and he used to smash me every game. And you and I have played pool and snooker before. You know, and this is before I played for Hampshire and stuff like that. But he used to beat every game after game. We were up there for like 3-4 hours. I wouldn't win a single game. But it made me a better player eventually because, you know, I learned from that and I just wanted to push on and get better. So I used to go up there and practice for hours on end on my own, you know, just to improve my game. So, yeah, definitely. It's that mindset, isn't it?
Could have gone a bit the opposite way. You could have turned around and said, right, that's it.
Give up.
I'm rubbish at this. I'm going to go and play netball or something.
Absolutely. So, yeah, brilliant. So, sorry, we've been going for about 25 minutes so far, so I don't want to take too much of your time up. But the social aspects of our sport. What do you think about that? I've got a few things written down here. You know, teamwork, and I've also written down about working independently to achieve a team objective. Sometimes that happens in certain sports. Yep. What do you think about that? The social aspects.
Yeah, it's just another transferable skill, Luke, that we've been talking about. The ability to work with other people.
Yeah.
Presumably, every young person is going to enter the work market at some place, at some point in their lives, unless they've got some massive trust fund. So they're going to have to learn to work with others for a common goal, be part of a team for a common goal. And if they can't, to last very long in that job.
No.
It's just another skill. And just to be around like-minded people. You join a football club, you know that everybody in a football club likes football. So instantly you're going to have a common thing that you're all going to be on the same page on. So, you know, good sport attracts good people generally. There's not too many out and out folks that go and regularly turn up and apply themselves to a sport. So if you're taking a young person to an organised sport that's really well run, they're going to meet minded young people, and their ideas and everything are going to be social as opposed to anti-social. Do you get
the
drift?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So it's a kind of self-feeding sort of prophecy. You know, you take young person to a good place with good people and good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about producing the next generation of super athletes, professional athletes, although that is a possibility, and it should be a goal if that's what the young person wants.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about turning out a group of young people that are healthy, to communicate, able to work as part of a team, able to apply themselves, and most importantly, to feel good about themselves. Now, if you play sport, any level, start to progress, you're going to feel good about yourself. You know, when you win, when you play, even if you don't win, when you play well, when you perform well, so you're going to feel good about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Underlines everything in life. If you're not feeling good about yourself, you're already at a disadvantage. If you are feeling good about yourself, that's a knock-on effect. Oh yeah, I can perform well at football. I can equally perform well at my college. I can equally perform well in my job. I can equally make relationships because I've done that. You know, within the club, within my teammates, within people around me, I can make relationships. So many social skills, and the self-esteem is probably, along with health, the two biggest things that I would associate with. With school.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I've written down here about inclusion. I know we've already covered that, so I don't want to go over the same thing again. But in terms of working as a team, I find that in football, lots of players are good at different things. And I mean, you know, I'm learning lots from today's talk as well. And do you think it's important for these kids to think, all right, so they're playing with Matt and Chris. Matt's really good at passing. Chris is really good at finishing. So in that situation, I might try and get the ball to Matt because he can then feed it into Chris, and then Chris can finish, you know? And I can, so you take your strengths and you use the strengths from people around you to create that final piece, if you like. And I think that relates a lot to life as well. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at any structure of any organization, any work organization, every organisation will have people that have particular strengths. You have people that are in HR, you have people that are in administration, you have people that are, you know, doing depending on the company, they're doing all the graft, you know, the heavy lifting work, for example, it's a building company. Everybody has got their strengths, and that if any one of those facets fall down, the company will suffer. And it's very similar to sport. What I will say is if you've got a young person that's got a particular skill, passing, heading, scoring, whatever it is, important that that's recognised, but it's equally important that you lift him up in the other departments.
Yeah.
His own passing and his own heading and his own scoring. You lift everybody up. Come game day,
Yeah.
Fainted on strength. But in practice, you're looking to lift up in those all those areas.
Yep. Yeah. So it's all about focusing on your weaknesses in practice, potentially. Yeah. So somebody's not good at something, picking them up. And that my last point on that was just trust and trusting your teammates, because something, this is kind of a personal question for me, but I think it will benefit a lot of people who are coaches and parents and some players that are listening to this as well. When somebody's not good at something, still trusting them to do it. For instance, I've been a manager or coach of teams where one of my centre-backs is struggling with playing out from the back. And my keeper's like, I don't want to pass to him because he's going to make a mistake. And I really encourage him to keep on passing the ball to him. And I know that can go one of two ways. That player maybe doesn't want the ball, so it's going to affect their morale and, you know, maybe potentially bring them down, you know. But I'd hope that, you know, if you install the right principles, you can teach them that, no, you've got to keep trying to get there.
Yeah, I think competition, by definition, involves risk.
Yep.
To take risks. You have to take calculated risks. And I think if the risk of perhaps the odd mistake in your scenario, the odd mistake where you can't play out from the back and he gets caught with the ball and the opposition scored, I think that if ultimately that player becomes a better player, becomes more confident and gains the trust in himself and gains the trust of his team members, that's a massive step forward collectively. So, yeah, I think risk-taking in sport is necessary. That's another thing, just very quickly, talking about child development, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we're in a society that is risk-adverse.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do anything without some massive risk assessment associated to it.
Yeah.
And a generation of young people that haven't been exposed to reasonable risk. And I think you learn a lot by the risk. Finding out what that, obviously, as long as it's not fatal, finding out what that risk entails and learning to manage it, how to overcome it, etc., etc. We just live in this sterile, risk-averse society. And I actually think it's hindering young people's development, as is non-competitive sports in schools. Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where schools are taking all the elements of competition out of their sporting sessions, because they don't want to create any losers anyone to feel like a loser. Well, everything in life is a competition. As human beings, we compete for everything. We compete for qualifications, we compete for jobs, we compete for girlfriends, we compete for housing, we compete for promotion, we compete, we compete, we compete. That is the human nature, that's human beings.
Yep.
We start taking competition out of our young people, and I think we're worse for it. I think that competition needs to be, coaches play a massive part. We coach correctly and they compete correctly. That's a good, healthy competition.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got coaches that down or ostracize people when they're not competing well, then it has a sort of an adverse effect.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think what you were saying was that's fine, brilliant. Development over winning, pretty much. And I think I heard a webinar the other day from a Premiership coach. And he was talking about in that scenario what they've got to do, what they've got to do to win, you know. And they were, and he said it would be stupid of a coach to have a group of players that, you know, haven't got the ability to play out from the back, but still make them play out from the back. And that kind of touched a nerve in me, because I thought, well, it's not only teaching them to play out from the back, it's teaching them that if they can't do something, you know, can we push through it and learn to do that, and you know, and learning different skills like perseverance and trust and all those things. So I think taking development over winning is a massive thing, because a lot of coaches wouldn't play out from the back because they think, oh, they can't do that. I don't think there's no such word as can't, I think, you know? And a non-competitive sport thing, just quickly before we move on to the last bit, how do you think that schools, the fact they don't want to do non-competitive sport, they do that because they're worried that kids are going to start picking on each other. Like, oh, Johnny can't do that, and laughing at him and making fun. And of course, that's not going to be good for Johnny. That's going to affect his mental state. Maybe he's not going to want to come to school. So perhaps they're doing that non-competitive element to stop that from happening and to stop bullying. How do you think they can manage that situation? Well, and you know, because you've been in that environment.
Yeah, my experience of young people is if Johnny's no good at football, and we take that away, you know, we take that possibility of him getting bullied or ridiculed, my experience is a bully will find something else. You know, they'll find something else to bully him or other people for. So that's a ridiculous. I think it's more of a shortcoming, and I don't want to be disrespectful to any teachers out there, but I think it's more of a shortcoming on the way that sport is taught sometimes in school. You can have competition without ridiculing people. You can have competition where people win and lose. They can use both experiences as a learning. You know, winning and losing are just different sides of the coin. And we are going to lose something in life. I might not get the promotion that I thought I'm due. I may not get the house that I wanted, or I may not be able to do whatever. I may not get the supermodel girlfriend that I wanted. Linda's not going to listen to this, but she's my supermodel. I'm going to lose. It's guaranteed I'm going to lose at something. If you don't lose at something as you go through your life, you're a charmed individual. So I'd much rather that Johnny could have an experience of losing
at a younger age.
Go through life thinking, oh yeah, I'm a winner. I'm a winner. Everything's great. They get to young adulthood, and then they lose at something.
It just ruins, yeah.
The skill, where's the coping mechanism? Where's the experience? It's going to devastate them. I feel really strongly that it is counterproductive. And I think if sport is taught correctly, losing shouldn't be an issue. It should be something that's factored into the way it's taught.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's a long old journey, isn't it? It's a long old road. So when you're 12, 13 and you have a real big loss and something hits you hard, yeah, it might hurt at the time. But as you go later through life in your 30s or whatever, that's going to come back to really help you in certain situations. So, yeah, absolutely. That's brilliant. Okay, and lastly, I think we touched upon most of it, to be fair, but I put here the health benefits. You said about self-esteem and like the mental benefits of doing sport. I think we touched upon a few bits. Anything else you want to add to that, or have we kind of covered it all?
I think we kind of covered it all. I just think that it's so underrated, still underrated, particularly as we're going into a generation where we're seeing increasing amounts of obesity, and we're seeing a rise in antisocial behavior. I truly believe there is a correlation between a disinterest or non-interest in sport and antisocial behavior. Young people have to do something with their time. Wouldn't it be better if they were affiliated to some club, you know, athletics club, football club, netball club, swimming club? It really doesn't matter. The absence of that, time can be a terrible thing. Young people with time on their hands can be a terrible thing. Why not fill it with sport?
Absolutely. Brilliant. Cheers for that, Glenn. That's amazing, to be fair. I've learnt a lot as well, actually, to be fair, because, of course, like, you've been in this, I won't disclose your age, don't worry, but you've been in this game for a long time, and I've learned a lot from you over the years from our previous discussions and more today. So that's brilliant. Any questions you've got for me before we go? Because of course, from my coaching and stuff like that.
Yeah. Obviously, I've known that you've been in coaching for quite a few years, but I've noticed certainly in the last, kind of stepped up for your commitment to putting together coaching sessions and trying to be, quite sort of innovative in the way you go about your coaching, rather than have a stock book of sort of coaching drills and things like that, I noticed that you really are starting to create, you know, your own.
Yep.
I'd like to know what's kind of spurred you to do that and why you feel the need to do it. Because it would be very easy for you to buy a book on Joe Brog's book on how to coach football and just read it out to your teams and let them go and do their thing.
Yeah, well, I think I found over the years, like, you're so right. Like, I'll go back five, six years ago when I first started coaching, and I'd see a session on YouTube and I'd think, oh, that's brilliant, I'm going to do that tomorrow. And I'd literally copy the exact session, you know. I'd read it and I'd copy it. And as the years went on, I started to develop more my own coaching philosophy and thinking what I want to get out of my coaching and get across to the players. So I started adapting the session slightly. And I thought, okay, let's not just adapt, let's try and create my own. So then I went down a route of trying to create my own sessions to get... And now within my sessions, there's moments where... there's a social element. There's an element where we can really, you know, there might be something that happens that goes wrong. So how can we learn from that? What skills we have to apply? And getting lots of coaching points across, which, like we've been talking about today, not only helping in football, but in life. So, yeah, it's about just trying to find my own kind of way of doing things, really, and being more independent rather than, yeah, just following the norm.
One question for you, Luke. What is the most important, probably a difficult one. What is the most important quality for a coach, any coach in any sport? What is the most important quality?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. I think for me, the most important quality would be to lead by example. I think you can say it all you want, but the players actually have to see it. And I think, you know, I've been lucky enough to have some positive feedback from some of my players over the years that they felt that way. I think that, you know, you go there and you say, you know, for instance, if you start talking about, you know, being on time or something like that, timekeeping or something like that, or respect, and then they can clearly see that you're disrespecting somebody else. Or if you tell them to talk to you a certain way, but you're not willing to talk to them and give them the same respect that you expect to get. I think leading by example for me is massive. You know, in all of I know that's not just a coaching thing, because I know that's not really talking about technically as a coach. Of course, you've got to have a bit of know-how and technical nous about you to be able to teach the players. But I think leading by example and everything you do is important.
Okay. At the start of the season, you've got a choice. Your team win the league and win the cup. But none of the players have proved technically or emotionally, for want of a better word, as young people, none of them have developed. Or you don't win those trophies, but all of your team developed technically as, you know, as young people within themselves. Which choice? What would be your choice?
Without a shadow of a doubt, I know it's easy for me to say now, but I can also give you an example. Without a shadow of a doubt, would be the second choice, you know. For me, it's all of the development has to be there. Whether we win, lose or draw, it's all about player development. Now, I go back to my lads when they were under 11s, I think, and we were in Division 1 of the Tyro League. And now we're in a division which was much, much too high for us. And we lost every single game, Glenn. Every game. And I'm talking not just by a little bit, 8-0, 13-0. You know, we lost every game and the boys were still so upbeat. The parents couldn't believe it because at the end of every game, the boys are still hanging around kicking the balls in the goal, laughing and joking, you know. And it was about the attitude that we tried to install in them. Yeah, right now we're struggling, boys, but we're learning from it and we're developing as players and as people. And I think that's so important. At the end of every game, we used to have our Jaffa cakes. That's something we carried through all the years. And then went to under 12s, had a better season, under 13s and under 14s, we ended up winning the cup. So we went from that situation there. Bearing in mind, I still at this point got at the under 14s, there were still 6 or 7, maybe 8 of the original players from that under 11 season where we lost every game. And those boys have continued through, continued to progress, got to under 14s and won the cup. And that was just an amazing day. And they also finished runners up in the league that season. But then... back down to earth. Under 15s, we had a tough season, and the season just gone has been a bit up and down. So it is a roller coaster, but player development is definitely at the forefront of that. Yeah.
Good. I've got one more question for you. If you met one of your students, one of your team members in years time, whatever they're doing, yep, whether they're playing for England or whether they're, you know, working in the supermarket, what would you like them to come up and say to you about their experience of you coaching them? What would you like them to say? Put you on the spot there.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'd like them to feel like the stuff that we did and the stuff that I said was worthwhile, that they've been able to apply some of that throughout their life. And, you know, only recently I've had conversations, because I'm actually stepping down from managing my under 16 team this season. And the reason being, I've had them for 6 years, and I've told them I feel like it's got to a point now where I can't teach them the stuff that, you know, they just want to turn up now potentially and play a game. You know, they're going to be under 18s. They've got other stuff going on. They're going to college, girls, other stuff comes into play. And I explained to them how I don't feel like they're in a position now. Now, I don't know, you may agree with this or not, to take on board the stuff that I've been, that I try and teach within my coaching. So I feel like I've given them a lot over the last 6 years. And I'd hope that they take that, and there's going to be moments in their life where they can relate that, and they come back to me in the future and tell me, you know, it's been worthwhile and I've been able to apply some of it. Maybe a thank you might be nice. Who knows? But I don't know what you feel about what I said about the under 16s now, and the fact they're going into under 18s, and I don't feel like I can maybe give them what I want to give them anymore. What do you feel like that's a failing on my part? And I'm happy for you to be completely honest. Do you feel like I need to get over that and find another way around it? Or I don't.
I think if you recognise a situation and that's not a failing,
yeah,
that shows awareness.
Self-awareness. Yeah.
So it's not failing. I think, you know, I think there probably is a limit. You wouldn't expect to coach somebody from like 11 all the way through to 21.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be situations where they're going to have to step out and learn things for themselves. And it sounds like you've equipped, you know, a lot of those young men, and women, I presume, to do that. So that's your job done, I think.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I'm glad you asked that question. I was able to ask that because it's something that laid heavy on my mind, because I was thinking, oh, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm just deserting them, because I don't feel like I want to do it anymore, because I still do. And I've always told those boys that I'll always be, you know, around to, you know, be a mentor. I'm still around the club and stuff to help them out in any way I can. But I feel like it's reached its finishing point in terms of that, you know. I'd hope that they'd learn something from my coaching over the years and be able to apply it in their lives. Yeah, that's definitely what I'd hope.
I think the truth of it is that you will never know. You will never know how you've impacted on somebody. I'm not just talking in a sort of sporting sense. I'm talking in their personal lives. Never know. And, you know, as I say, I've been in this work for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I came into working with young people naively thinking I was going to save everybody, save every young person that come into contact with, I'll turn their lives around. And
sure.
It doesn't work like that. And, you know, if you're looking for a pat on the back for the work that you've done and the changes that you may have instilled in somebody, you know, it might not come. You just need to have faith that you are influencing and changing young people for the better.
Yes.
You just have to, you know, sometimes you're fortunate enough to get that feedback, which is great, but a lot of times you will never know.
To be fair, I don't feel like I've had, because I don't go looking for it, like you say, you know, it's just the way that I do things. And, you know, I've never said, oh, you know, how do you feel about what's going on here? You know, really, you know, I want to get their feedback and make sure they're okay, but I'm not looking for recognition. You know, that's what basically I'm trying to say, you know. And if it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't, you know. And you just, like you say, you just got to trust that what you're doing is the right thing. Yeah.
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 Brilliant.
Yeah, perfect. I've got just two questions for you, Glenn. Two questions for you, and then we'll call it a day. So, have you ever had an experience where somebody you coached or taught from a young age or been part of their life, and you've gone on to later life to see that they've there's two halves to this. One gone down the bad path, and one elevated to not necessarily success, but a good life, you know. Yeah, definitely.
I have seen both, and I've seen both to the sort of worst extremes, really. I was working in a secure unit. I used to coach a lad there, and it was plain to see, I'm not a football coach by any stretch, but it was plain to see that this kid had skills.
Yeah.
But he's locked up.
Oh, wow.
He can't display those skills other than the exercise yard.
Yeah.
And I arranged for a Millwall Football Club coach to come in and have a look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And they came into the secure unit, watched the football match that was being played, and sure enough, they were raving about him, absolutely raving about this kid.
Yeah.
And they agreed for him to sign apprenticeship papers, you know, the day or very soon after him getting out. So you've got this lad who's got this football. I believe that he would have outgrown Millwall very, very quickly.
Yes.
Outstanding. So, I mean, you've got this lad who's potentially the Premiership football lifestyle ahead of him.
Yeah.
So that almost certainly would have happened. He was outstanding. Anyway, he got out. His mates decided to throw a big getting out party for him.
Yeah.
He got drunk, had a fight, hit this kid, his head on the pavement, and was badly injured.
Oh, wow.
And himself straight back inside again.
Oh.
So in an instant, that millionaire lifestyle that was, I would say, almost certainly ahead of him, was gone. And I saw him many years later, when I was out with my sons, saw him on the street homeless.
Wow.
And I didn't recognize him, but he did recognize me. And he'd been on the streets begging. And it was just ridiculously sad. So from one extreme, you know, from the millionaire lifestyle to homeless, and, you know, with no future.
Yeah. Before you give me the opposite to that, how did you feel about that? Because I'm just kind of gearing myself up and trying to learn from your experience here as well. Because, of course, my players that I've coached are still very young. They're starting to get older now, and I'm just trying to, see.
Well, in that particular scenario, I was just filled with complete sadness.
Yeah.
You know, that's one second. It was one punch, you know.
Yeah.
1 second can change him, with the lifestyle that he had ahead of him, even at Millwall, I'm not dissing Millwall, but it's not Premiership, you know what I mean? But even as a professional at Millwall, he had a very, very good lifestyle.
Absolutely.
And would have been able to help and support his family and all the things. He was a good lad. He wanted to do all of that. It's just taken away. Well, it wasn't taken away, you know, like we saw about ownership. It was snatched from him in an instant.
Yeah.
And it's gone to the other extreme.
Yeah.
So it filled me with sadness, but it made me realise just how finely balanced life can be.
Yeah. And I think, like you say, you can install all the principles you like in them, but at the end of the day, they've got to take ownership and make their own choices. You know. So So that's
ultimately very sad, but there was a part of me that said, well, you know, I arranged the scout to come in. You know, I set everything up. I took him to Millwall, you know, when he got out, you know, and stuff like that. So I did, I could. So I, you know, although I felt sad, I didn't feel in any way that I could have done more.
Yeah. And then getting on to a good positive one now, an experience where you've seen them flourish and go from good to great. And
I've seen quite a few. We've got one there. I think what you have to do is find what their interest is. And we have one lad, and his interest was music, playing it, DJing.
Mm-hmm.
He had a real knack for it. His name's Scott Garcia, and he left us and went on to carve out a really, really good career in DJing. Played at a lot of most exclusive clubs. Have you heard of Browns?
Browns,
which is where all the footballers go, etc., etc.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a resident DJ at Browns. It did incredibly well. Earned more money than I could ever.
Nice.
And it's done incredibly well. So, another scale, one of our lads left, went to work for Car Phone Warehouse.
Yep.
And now he's like regional or national manager.
Wow.
Of Car Phone Warehouse and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, success doesn't have to look like being a Premiership footballer.
No.
Top DJ. Success could be and would be for a lot of young people I work with, holding down a job and, you know, starting a family and just doing regular things.
Absolutely.
So success looks different for everybody.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you said this to loads of kids before in the past. You've had loads of these chats. Just in 1 minute, can you, just for any kids that listen to this podcast, because I try and get this out to try and get some of my young players, you know, which are under 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, to go on there and have a listen as well. So just any words of wisdom, just a minute of wisdom with Glenn Nichols, the man himself, of what these kids can do to keep progressing and become the best version of themselves.
Well, I'm not sure if I've got any words of wisdom. And I think I've listened to a lot of mainly American type situations where they'll say, follow your dreams, Johnny. No matter what you want to do, you need to be wherever you want to be, Johnny. Just close your eyes and dream. I've heard far too many of them. In the real world, have dreams, but don't just think about dreams. Go out and grab a dream. And don't be afraid. Be afraid to fail.
Yep.
Because failure is just the flip side of success, really. And that, I think that's probably my biggest thing. Don't be afraid to fail, and believe that if you apply yourself, something good will happen. It may not necessarily be exactly what you want, but if you aim high, you're going to finish high. For example, you might want to play football. Apply yourself, club. A small percentage of players end up playing in the major leagues, Premiership, Championship, First League, etc. So it's a tiny amount. That's the reality. But if you apply yourself, you may find yourself in a different role in journalism, sports journalism, coaching. Physiotherapy.
Yeah.
Sports psychology. It could be anything where your passion has led. If you don't become a Premiership footballer, that's not failure.
Yeah.
That's someone who's tried and may be destined for other things. So it's a bit long-winded, but in a nutshell, don't be afraid to fail.
No, brilliant. That is absolutely perfect. Right, Glenn, you're an absolute legend. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today, mate. I've been wanting to get people on the podcast for a while now. I took like 2 weeks of not doing one whilst I was trying to think of different material and stuff. And I'm so glad to have you on here. It's been brilliant. I've learned a lot. Hopefully people have enjoyed it. We've had people on the live chat today. It also is going to be on Spotify and Anchor in terms of the stream. So the audio will be being posted on there later. I'll edit it and stick it up there. And yeah, thanks again, Glenn. You're a legend. Cheers, mate. And my mother says hi as well. Just so you know.
I love your mum.
Take care, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye. Right, guys. For those of you that have been watching on Facebook Live here, I think I've got James clicked in at some point. I'm not sure if Jane's still watching. Luke's been there, Charlie, Brandon, Lisa checked in. A few people have checked in on the live chat today. I've been doing a live podcast. We've also had Mark Stuppel. Mark, you still watching? And Simon, I think, still watching there as well. So today, guys, we've had a live podcast talking about the importance and benefits of sport for young people. This has been amazing today. It's been really good. Not many people on the live chat, but the audio will be posted on Spotify, Anchor, and on my page. If you haven't yet checked my page out, go over to Youth Football Development with Coach Luke. Click the like button, click the follow button, and you can keep up to date with what I put on there. I've also streamed this out live on my Swansea Schoolboys page that I've recently created as well. Try and get out to those people. Mark, you've been watching from Stoneham, so please feel free to click share after this post finishes and share the video on the Stoneham page as well so people can watch it back. It's been brilliant. We've covered so much today, guys. I'll be back with another podcast, hopefully within the next week, with a different special guest on there. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Thanks for watching. Take care. Thank you for you guys listening on the podcast on the audio only version. Have a great day. Take care of yourselves. Stay safe. And I'll see you on the next episode.